Hello, everyone. Welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty, and I'm coming to you from Reno, Nevada.
You partying hard? Getting the casino life in?
Currently standing in my sweatpants post-interview, because we couldn't check into our hotel until 2. But we got to interview Paulo from Trivium. It was great. It was awesome to talk to him. We're big fans of Trivium, so this was awesome. And I just got to say that when Michael and I first started this podcast about a year ago now, the first episode was about Trivium's The Sin in the Sentence. So for us to come full circle and interview Paulo was truly amazing.
Yeah, really cool. Like, it was hard not to get like all like weird and nerdy and fanny or like.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, we didn't want to gush over him, basically.
Yeah.
And you know what? We didn't. So it was good. It went really well, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. He kind of picked his own adventure that we made for him, and in between his choices, we kind of do like the pick your own adventure, like the books. And in between the choices, we ask him questions that you guys probably want to hear from Paulo. I think Michael's got some quick facts about Paulo.
Yeah, just for a little context, Paulo joined Trivium before or after the album Ember to Inferno. So he was on Ascendancy, the Trivium's second album. He is 33 years old and born in Miami, Florida. I believe he still resides in Florida when he's not, you know, touring the country and the rest of the world. He writes a weekly column for UK's Bass Guitar magazine.
And yeah, so Paulo's an interesting guy. Was there another thing?
Nope.
Okay, yeah. And he's just an awesome individual, of course, and a great contributor to what Trivium does. So before we get into this interview with Paulo here, we're going to do a little self-plugging of our own. Remember that you can go to www.supermetalworld.com. Great website. Please check it out. Check out our articles. Check out our past podcasts. We've been talking a lot about Tenacious D. Tenacious D put out a new web series, and we kind of dissected and go over it the first 3 episodes. We also talked about the Pick of Destiny and did a deep dive and dissected that as well. You can find us on all social media. Super Metal World is what you would search and how you would find us. Please give us a like or a follow and go to iTunes. Give us a rate and a review. It helps us so much to get our podcast out there. 5 stars would be great. We'd be very appreciative. And also, any questions, concerns, if you are a smaller band that wants to be featured on our podcast, go to supermetalworld@gmail.com and type us up an email, and we'll do our best to get back to you as soon as we can. Horns high, everyone. Enjoy the episode.
Horns high. All right, everyone, we're here with Paulo of Trivium. Paulo, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How
awesome.
Are you?
Good. I'm doing well. You guys are out on the road right now on tour?
Yes, we are. We're in St. Louis today.
Excellent. So I think we're just going to get going right away. We have our kind of standard Super Metal World choose your own adventure activity here for you. So I'm going to start, and then I'm going to give you 2 options, and you can just respond and let me know how you would handle that situation. Are you ready?
All right. Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. You awake wearing the same clothes from last night. Your clock reads 7:30 p.m. You're usually ready to go around this time. This never happens. You're in a dingy old hotel that is unfamiliar to you. You quickly check your pockets for your phone and find them empty. What do you do? Do you A, grab the phone in the hotel room and call the operator? Maybe they can give you some information. Or do you leave the hotel room and exit the building?
Probably call the operator.
All right. Sounds like a sound choice. So we'll take a little break in the action. So my first question for you, Paulo, you were first credited as joining Trivium on Ascendancy. Can you tell us the too long, didn't read version of your life, kind of growing up, discovering music, learning the bass, and then eventually joining Trivium?
Yeah, I started playing bass because I wanted to play music with my friends. We were going to play a festival at our school. That was the beginning of that. Played in my own local band for about 6 years, which, you know, in that time included discovering Metallica, getting into metal, kind of just learning the ropes of being in a band, playing and singing, and then met Trivium through playing some shows in other parts of Florida where we kind of met for the first time and just kind of stay connected. And they lost the bass player, and I was looking for a new situation, and that was sort of how our paths crossed.
Okay, so you kind of didn't, you heard of these guys, but you didn't know them personally.
No, we played a few shows together. Like, that's how I ended up meeting and hearing about them. And also, Jason, who did the Ascendancy record with us, was sort of like another part of the connection, because I met him at like a local show. I played in Orlando once, and that's how I kind of like got and pretty much introduced to the music of Trivium, like Ember to Inferno, the demo. I don't know if they had done Ember yet, but like at least the demo music. So that was my sort of beginning of my connection with the band.
And was it something you were vibing with right away? You're like, man, I love what these guys at Trivium are doing. Or did that take you a while to kind of like adopt that style?
No, I was definitely into it because, you know, my band at the time, we weren't really too similar. But I mean, it was kind of a similar situation where like, it's, you know, guys in their team playing like heavy metal, not playing kind of like that like new metal style at the time. So that was sort of like instantly kind of, we had that kind of going for both of our bands. So I don't know, like right away I was definitely into it, and I had sort of started getting more into the screaming style of metal. So it wasn't like a shock hearing more screaming at that point.
So fast forward to today, you guys, it's been about a year since The Sin and the Sentence was released. It received critical acclaim from fans and critics kind of a year after the release, letting it sit and marinate. Why do you think it resonated so well with everyone?
I think we were just able to really pair the sort of aggression and maybe a little bit more of our original sort of anything goes type sound with our approach to, you know, songwriting that we've developed over the last few records. I don't think we like wanted to make a harsh like 180 and kind of like go for this whole like, well, we got to sound like how we did 10 years ago, 12 years ago. It was more of like, how do we inject like what made a lot of the initial Trivium albums exciting for a lot of people with, you know, the songwriting prowess we've sort of developed, you know, working with a lot of great producers and just developing our own songwriting abilities. And I think that sort of was the perfect combination, because our fans at the shows are like this mix of a ton of new fans and then a lot of like older fans that maybe had kind of like not been following us for a while and sort of like heard the new record and were like, whoa, like what have these guys been up to? So it's been the best of both worlds for us.
And how integral was the addition of Alex Bent to that process?
I mean, I think that was sort of like the linchpin for us, because we had a lot of music written. And I think, you know, if Alex wasn't on the record, I think we would have had a good record just based on like the riffs we had and some of the ideas. But getting Alex in was like sort of this, I don't know, shot in the arm that like, it just really enhanced everything. His playing is so exciting and so interesting that I don't know if we would have been able to come up with something as good as this record without him. He just really brought a lot of musicality to the drums, a lot of excitement. And again, I think like that's a big part of like why people kind of view this record in the same way that they do some of the earlier records. It's just like the drumming was sort of like exciting, interesting, a little different. And, you know, Alex was definitely a big part of bringing that back out in our sound.
Yeah, and I think it's evident from the first couple clicks on the title track, The Sin and the Sentence. So that being said, we'll kick it back to Michael and see where we're at with our decision team.
Okay, so last time you decided to go for the phone, right? So
yes.
You grab the phone and press 0. The phone rings for what seems like an eternity. Nobody picks up. it appears that the front desk is empty, forcing you to leave the hotel room. So you decide to leave the hotel room and realize you're on the main floor. You walk towards the lobby and no one is at the front desk. The place seems deserted. You notice nothing completely out of the ordinary and decide your only option is to walk outside. Once outside, you quickly notice that you're in a rundown part of what seems to be a smaller city, maybe 200,000 people. There are homeless wandering around the other side of the street and what looks like drug transactions occurring in the alleyway. You notice a group of rough-looking characters approaching you from the other side of the street. As soon as you notice this, a black Escalade pulls up in front of you, and a guy in a black suit and black glasses says, "We've been looking for you. Come with us if you want to live." What do you do? A. Get in the car. The people crossing the street look sketchy, and this seems like the best option. Or B. Refuse to get in the car. You'll find your own way out of this mess and deal with the group of strangers on your own.
I would definitely go with B, because I'd rather test my luck just being able to just walk around than get in a car and not know where it's going.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so we'll pause in the action again. So I was looking through the Wikipedia on you, Paulo, and it said you had a hand in writing Into the Rats, The Rising, Anthem, We Are the Fire, Throats of Perdition. What other songs would fans be surprised to know you had a hand in writing?
A lot of the new record lyrics I wrote, and some of the vocal melodies. It's kind of like with us, definitely The Crusade and Shogun, like the songwriting credits are sort of like, it's hard to really draw a line around like who wrote what, because a lot of times, especially like the new record, like I might bring in a song, or Corey or Matt and bring in a song, and like we'll rewrite a lot of stuff on the spot. So it sort of like gets lost, after we write it, it's always like, oh, who actually wrote this riff? But, like a lot of stuff. In Waves was definitely probably one of my favorite songs I brought in. So the World Goes Cold, like musically. There's a lot. But I don't really like think too much about it, because I feel like once it gets written once it's done in the studio, once it's recorded, like I feel like it's just a Trivium song. So it's not as like, oh, this one's mine,
Right. It's a more by committee kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like once it gets into the rehearsal room, it's sort of like, okay, now it's going to turn into a Trivium song, because it sort of needs everyone's input, and sometimes like it doesn't need too much change, but sometimes I think it's good to have other ears in it.
Right.
And I think that's the way we write stuff. I feel like our songwriting process is so like democratic in how we go through things that it takes a lot of like the friction out of like songwriting, and it just makes the best possible choice evident, and everyone's like cool with going with that when it arises.
That makes sense. I'm sure it's when somebody doesn't have like an ownership over it, it's not like the egos don't grow as much maybe.
Yeah. Everyone, I think, it's everyone's song and everyone benefits from the song getting better. And that's probably the biggest breakthrough you can have as a band, is once you're like on that kind of mindset with writing, it becomes a lot better, a lot easier to do so.
So you're touring right now with Light the Torch, and that features the frontman Howard Jones, who used to be in Killswitch Engage. Killswitch Engage lauded as one of the forefathers of metalcore. I was just always curious, do you guys consider Trivium to be a metalcore band?
I guess like we have all those elements in our sound, and like we love metal, we love hardcore, we love death metal and all that. So I don't know if there's like an appropriate like genre term for what we do, but I would definitely consider that a part of our sound, and it's definitely kind of rode in on the wave of the new wave of American heavy metal / metalcore. So I feel like no matter what, that's sort of in the DNA of Trivium.
And is it because you're touring with Light the Torch, of course. Do you guys see each other often, or is it kind of one of those things where everybody kind of keeps to themselves, but, you know, you're touring together?
No, I mean, we were just talking to Howard today, and, you know, we're friends with Francesco from, he was in the band All Shall Perish, so we toured with him quite a bit, with, like, Mayhem and different stuff like that. So we know all these dudes, and obviously the band Avatar is out with us as well, and I feel like it's one of those things where, like, you definitely... Not every day. It's not like a big like hangout after the show, because normally everyone's just sort of like getting ready for bed and like the trip that night. So you kind of hang out and talk here and there, and you have your like kind of hangouts. Hopefully once or twice on the tour, you can kind of have a longer hangout. I'm not sure, because we're starting to move west and out to like places where the drives keep getting longer and longer. So I'm not sure if we'll have any hangouts. Maybe in Anaheim. When it's like a, you know, after the one big show, we can kind of have a good chill session with everyone and hang out and have some drinks.
So I was reading, I think it was Loudwire where I read this, that Alex Barkatsis was claiming that Atreyu created metalcore. Do you have an opinion on that, or maybe you don't care?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like music's such a, like, fluid thing where, like, you'll never be able to pinpoint, like, who created what, you know, like people say Chuck Berry like created rock with like you know, that I think what was her name, that Sister Thorpe or something, was like playing like distorted guitar like years and years before, and but no one had the terms to call it that. So I feel like it's the exact same thing with like metalcore. Like you could probably find bands like mid 80s or earlier kind of doing those things, but there's a lot that like never really broke big, but like maybe that local band that no one knows about influenced the band that kind of gets popular. So that's kind of the thing I've seen a lot of people say, which I would agree with, is like there's probably local bands you just don't know of that really kind of were sort of the seeds for that movement. But I mean, you could start saying bands like maybe DRI and all those crossover type bands doing that stuff. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with like rap metal. I mean, Anthrax was doing stuff with like rappers like way before people even started using that term. So I guess it's subjective, but I mean, I guess it depends on what you consider the metalcore sound to be, because, you know, the modern metalcore sound would be like a, you know, like you said, like a Killswitch or early Atreyu. So maybe everyone's right in this. It just depends on what the sounds and all the terms of like what metalcore would be are set as.
Wise words. So we'll swing it back over to Michael.
Okay, so you decided to not get into that Escalade, and the guy in the car, he pulls out a gun, but you dive out of the way as a bullet screams past you. The group approaching takes out their phones, and this spooks the driver, who speeds away. The group of guys approaches you, and the leader says, "Hey man, you look a lot like the bassist from Trivium." What do you say? Do you say, "Yes, I am Paolo, of Trivium fame, my dudes. Where the fuck am I? I have a show tonight." Or do you say, "Nah, I don't know what a Trivium is, bro."
I'd probably go with A, because they sound like they can help me figure out what's going on.
Okay, you let them know that you are, in fact, Paolo of Trivium.
Awesome. Okay. So back to me. Do you think metal is more relevant now or when you guys first burst on the scene in the 2000s?
I mean, I guess like metal, even when we kind of like came onto the scenes, I mean, I guess there was sort of this like moment where like a lot of bands like Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath were sort of like finding like a new relevance, and like Iron Maiden had just gotten back with like Bruce Dickinson. So I feel like there was definitely a resurgence of like people appreciating older metal and rock music. And at the same time, you had like a whole new crop of bands coming up. So I feel like those two events like really created this like real presence for the genre. I feel like now it's like, you know, years and years after all of that stuff, you got, you know, a lot of those older bands still kind of doing their thing. So don't know, maybe yes and no in some ways. I mean, I feel like for us personally, we've never been a bigger band. We're, you know, doing some of our biggest shows, headlining ever, you know, but I don't know if that necessarily reflects on like the genre as a whole, but I don't know. I never get too worried about like, is the genre like the biggest band? It's like, are there quality bands out? Are there new bands that are awesome? And I feel like, yes, there are a ton of bands, and maybe just, you know, that next like wave of great new metal bands is sort of around the corner and it's sort of developing, and hard to say where it's going to be, but it seems like every couple of years something new kind of pops up, and just when you think like, oh, the genre sort of like petered out, it has nothing left to say, you know, other bands kind of pop up and make themselves known. I mean, I definitely am not too worried about it. As long as there's good bands playing and people want to hear aggressive music, you know, the genre will thrive.
Do you have any that you'd personally recommend that really are impressing you, like up and coming?
I mean, probably one of my favorite newer bands, definitely Power Trip, and we had them out on tour with us in Europe. And I mean, I'm like a sucker for like anything that's sort of like thrash kind of based. And I feel like they're sort of that, like, they're definitely rooted in like thrash, but it's sort of like got that like hardcore vibe and mentality to it. So I feel like they're definitely a really, they're one of those bands where like, I feel like when people see you wearing a Power Trip shirt, like people like are so stoked. And I feel like for metal, that's like the ultimate, you know, when people see a shirt and are stoked on a band and like you can see someone light up when they talk about a band like that, that is such a great thing. And I kind of use that as a kind of a indication of if a band's really got like something going for them, because with metal, it's all about like how hard, die hard your fan base is, you know, like that's the lifeblood. It's not even a numbers game at that point. It's like you have like fans that are passionate, and so they're definitely one of them. We had that band Code Orange out with us. They're great. Venom Prison, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of cool bands. I think you got to search it out a lot more. It's a lot harder to find new things because there's so much out there, you know. You go on Spotify, it's very overwhelming, and even for someone that loves to like listen to music all the time, it's like you can definitely feel like burnt out trying to find everything. The playlist helps, but still it's a lot to go through.
Well, yeah, I know Michael and I are big fans of Power Trip and Code Orange. Power mm-hmm. Trip specifically, Firing Squad, I love that. And you were mentioning you know, I've seen like Post Malone in Power Trip t-shirts, so that's gotta mean something.
Yeah, I think, you know, people, I know a lot of times, like, a lot of people are like, oh, like, metal's not appreciated and this and that. I'm like, I don't think it's, like, a commercial thing, but I think people, like, when someone goes to a metal show for the first time, they have no idea what to expect. I mean, there's nothing like it. I've been to other genres of music, you know, concerts, and it's just like, you'll never replicate what, like, the energy of a metal show is like, because that's what makes it unique. And I think that's like part of the staying power is like, you know, I know that's like why I continue to like love finding new bands, because like you just keep getting that experience over and over again of like the excitement of like finding a band you like, songs you like. And then when they're good live, when they're a great live band, like Power Trip's awesome. Like, man, that's the best. You know, I love that.
Yeah. Another thing you were talking about, you're kind of talking about Iron Maiden and, you know, even like mm-hmm. Megadeth, Metallica, Slayer, they all put out albums that were pretty well regarded kind of late 2000, maybe it was after 2010. I can't remember specifically. Mm-hmm. Michael and I have been going back and forth on this, and we did a podcast on it. Do you think the success of bands like that who have been around forever and have this big legacy, is that harmful that they're still around because it doesn't give anybody else a chance to rise to the top, or is it just kind of still good for metal because it's getting metal out there to people's ears?
I mean, I think like bands like putting out great records later on in their career is a net positive for all of us, because I think it's like, one, it shows that you can still put out like, you know, music that still matters, and it's not like relying so much on you being like this nostalgia act. You know, I think that's a lot of problems for maybe other genres, maybe like a lot of classic rock. That's like a problem. It's like people stop listening to the new albums and only care about what they hear on the radio. But it's like, you know, Megadeth's not played on the radio. So like, you gotta like listen to a Megadeth record. And if a Megadeth record is like Dystopia, you're super stoked and you care about it a lot more. I think more on the festival side of things, I think like promoters are definitely very conservative when it comes to like bands on the bills, and you're going to go with like the thing you know sells tickets, and sometimes that ends up making a festival lineup feel like really too safe. I feel like sometimes you got to take some risks on bands, especially when it starts coming to those like upper spots and even headliner spots. I think, you know, at some point it's like there's got to be other bands that start to like grow into those spots. And some festivals are really good with that, you know. I feel like overseas in Europe, there's like a grooming of bands to kind of like get to that level. And I think in the States, like, that's sort of like a thing that needs to develop a little better here. Cause like now we got these really cool festivals and that's awesome. Now it's like, okay, what's the next step? A lot of like newer bands got to start rising up on these bills. You can't keep putting bands that shouldn't be going on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at what's there, you know, like put them up a little bit higher, like get them in front of people, develop that next, you know, set of headliners and bigger bands. So that's sort of like the way I kind of feel about it. I don't think it's ever bad that like older bands like Metallica and Megadeth are putting out awesome records. I mean, I love it.
Yeah. And Michael and I saw you in, you guys played in Cadott, Wisconsin. You played at Rockfest. And I think you guys played at 3 or 5. I can't remember, but I was like, this is way too early for Trivium to be on. You know,
yeah,
I think there was other bands that were playing later that I'm like, why is this band? I can't think of the name of the band. It was kind of like I can't think of the name of the other band that was playing later, but I was very confused. Oh, it was Incubus. I was like, you guys should have been playing where Incubus was playing. I don't know. That's just me though.
Yeah, it's always kind of tricky with those things. I mean, what's important is like doing a headlining tour like we're doing now and like selling out shows and playing the biggest shows we've ever played in a lot of these cities, is that when we go back out on festivals, like, you know, realistically we'll move up a lot higher, and that'll just mean we have the proof that we should be at that spot, as opposed to like, oh, we should be there because of it just feels like we're more relevant or something like that. It's like, no, actually we have more tickets, so.
Right.
That definitely helps a lot more. And I don't know. I mean, I feel good about us personally. I feel like Trivium's in a great spot, and I feel like the genre is as well. And I feel like, you know, we'll see what the next few years hold, because you know, there's probably a lot of good albums waiting to be delivered that no one knows about yet. And who knows where it'll be, you know, like the music really dictates everything. And we're a great example. You put out a record that people really like, and it can sort of kind of almost set off this, like, I don't know, this sort of explosion of interest in your band once again.
And, you know, speaking of like legacy and all those things, do you think Trivium's albums as a whole, kind of looking at your whole work, has everything aged well? Or what do you think? Are there things that haven't that you wish you did differently?
I mean, I guess like maybe the only record, like the Crusade was sort of like controversial at the time with how much of a change it was from Ascendancy. I mean, I think like some of the songs have aged better, and I think people liked the record a lot more than like it when it initially came out. Some of it, I'm like, I personally, it's like, yeah, not the best stuff, and probably stuff we would never play, but like a few of the songs are definitely fan favorites. So I feel like as long as you get a couple good songs out of a record, even if it's not overall, you know, something that people love, that's definitely worth it. Maybe Vengeance Falls is sort of like in that same category for me. But, you know, once you kind of have a little time away from the record, you start to see like fans are like asking for it all the time, regardless of like the perception when it first came out. And that's like, that always blows my mind, you know, because like when we first put Shogun out, a lot of people were sort of like, it was sort of like a 50-50 reaction. And now it's like pretty solidly like a fan favorite. So time sometimes changes things like that.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting because I'm a big fan of the Crusade. I'm a big fan of like every song on there. I think it's just hard hitting riffs and great songwriting. Mm-hmm. Do you think, my question about the Crusade is, do you think if it was released at a different time instead of your second, or excuse me, instead of your third album, maybe if it was like your fifth or sixth, it would have been received differently? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. I mean, that's one of those things you always kind of like, one of those counterfactuals of like, you can never really know how something would go. And like, we were even talking today at breakfast, like, about some of those things. And it's like, I don't know, like, we ended up in the right spot, you know, or in a good spot. Like, one of the timelines that we could have ended up on was a good one. So it's sort of like, at that point, it's like, really, it almost doesn't matter, you know, because we went through it and it led us to like a good place. And maybe in a way, I feel like this record that we put out now, you know, a year ago, is sort of like the realized potential and vision of that record in a way, you know, and kind of took a little bit of trial and error to finally like go, okay, how can we blend all these crazy ideas in our head and make it into a song that makes sense, as opposed to like feeling like, you know, you're just shoving ideas together and not sort of fine tuning it as much as it needs to be, or having the abilities that you need to pull it off.
Yeah. I like that idea of it kind of being, I don't know if the spiritual successor is the right word, but I like the idea of the Crusade, or Sin in a Sentence, being kind of the, maybe what the Crusade could have been, or whatever, a refined version of the Crusade.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll swing it back to Michael.
Okay. So we last left you, where you let these guys that were crossing the street, you let them know that you are in fact, Paulo of Trivium. And they say, dude, you fucking rock. Your music changed my life. You're in Eugene, Oregon, by the way. We were just on the way to the show. Hop in our ride. So these guys seeming like pretty cool dudes, you decide to hitch a ride with the concert goers, and they discuss Trivium, their favorite songs, and their opinions on each album. Just when you think you are going to lose your mind, you reach the venue. You all park the car, exit, and head toward the entrance door. The ticket guy asks you for your ticket. You tell him you're in the band. He rolls his eyes. What do you do? Do you say, look me up on Google, you'll find me? Or do you try to run past the ticket guy? Maybe you can get backstage.
Definitely the Google thing.
The less risk-taking option, I like it. So,
yeah.
Okay, Paulo, we're almost through your adventure here. We just got a couple more questions for you. What's on the horizon for Trivium looking forward?
We're going to be taking some time off because Matt's having kids. But then we'll be back out probably April or May or June for sure, but April or May possibly next year. And we'll be rehearsing, writing, doing all that stuff in the meantime, in between touring again and, this tour.
Awesome. So my last question for you. Going through, you know, thinking about Alex, Corey, and Matt, I want you to tell us one thing you really appreciate about each one of them and one pet peeve, if you can think of one.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess like for like everyone in the band, I mean, the fact that we're able to like pour so effortlessly and really without any drama, I mean, that's sort of a group thing, you know. I appreciate that everyone is an adult about things, and we don't let petty things get in the way of like making this band as big of a band as it could be, you know, with the potential we have as players. So that's definitely it. I mean, I don't know. I can't really think of too much. I feel like we've worked out a lot of the stuff. Like, everyone's very respectful of each other's space and privacy, and you know, same thing with the crew. It's hard to like complain about people you just don't have any complaints about.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
All right, we'll kick it back to Michael, and he can kind of wrap up your adventure for you.
All right.
Okay, so after the ticket guy looks you up on Google, he He confirms that you are, in fact, Paulo. You head backstage, and you ask the guys, what the hell happened last night? They tell you that Matt thought it would make a great Twitch video, and no further explanation is offered as to what sort of shenanigans occurred.
So that's the end, Paulo. We've made it to We've made it to, there was four different options for you. We got to say that if you would have took the car option, there was a Vin Diesel cameo, but that's all right.
Oh, shit. Maybe but no. We'll have to run it another day.
Yeah, exactly. We appreciate you so much for putting
up with our
nerdy little interview here, and wish you the best on tour.
Thank you.
The best for Trivium. So thanks, Paulo.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Have a good one.